from the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean. Good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation or around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to America's most listened to late night talk show, Coast to Coast AM. Good to be back with you. Hope you had a great weekend. Of course, I wasn't here Friday. I was whisked off to the Radio and Records Convention here in Los Angeles, where there were a number of program directors there from all over the country. And by the way, congratulations to WABC New York's program director, Phil Boyce. He's also now the vice president of programming for ABC's news and talk radio stations. Phil was named the top programmer of the year by Radio and Records. How about that? Congratulations, Phil. Next hour, physicist John Ackerman with astounding theories of Velikovsky, including Mars teeming full of life 6,000 years ago. Here are some of the stories of the day, though. The World Health Organization says the bird flu virus may be changing into a form that humans can pass on. This is not good news, if, and I'll tell you the if in just a moment. The WHO is worried that bird flu, which has killed 47 people in Asia, could mutate into an easily spread form that sparks the next influenza pandemic. The organization has identified a cluster of human bird flu cases among relatives and possibly health workers in Vietnam. The main concern of the WHO was a series of cases of the deadly, it's called H5N1 bird flu virus, in a family in northern Vietnam, and the possible infection of two nurses who cared for one of the patients. The WHO says it has received confirmation of an additional 10 cases of human infections. The new cases were detected in early March or through re-examination of older cases, some of which dated back to late January, and it is almost always fatal. Is this real or contrived? Well, investigator John Rappaport will be with us in a moment as we'll talk about the bird flu. Meanwhile, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration has said no, they have denied a consumer group's petition asking for a ban of the cholesterol-lowering drug Crestor. The group, called Public Citizen, had argued that Crestor was way too dangerous to stay on the market. Well, the FDA said it has disagreed with the group's contention that Crestor was more likely than similar drugs made by other manufacturers to cause life-threatening muscle damage. The FDA also said there was no evidence to support the Public Citizen's charge that Crestor could seriously harm patients' kidneys. Crestor is part of a family of drugs called statins that millions of Americans take to lower cholesterol and reduce the chances of heart disease. China has begun its first human trials of a new AIDS vaccine. A 20-year-old man became the first volunteer to receive the AIDS vaccine on Saturday, followed by seven others, including four women. Some 49 volunteers aged 18 to 50 would receive the tests in three phases, the first lasting 14 months. The government there estimates that China, with a 1.3 billion population, has close to a million people with HIV already. You know, there are so many strange and sick things on the internet, you're not going to believe this one, and I am not going to give out the name of the website. There is an individual there who has a pet rabbit, and he is threatening to cook and eat his pet rabbit unless people send him $50,000. He's got a picture of his cute little bunny on the website. And what's so amazing, apparently, according to his website, he has already reached $18,000 in donations from people who don't want him to eat his pet rabbit. $18,000. What's so sick about all of this, of course, is not the fact that people are trying to help save the bunny. I mean, that's gallant. But the fact that somebody would try to extort money like that from people who care about animals. I mean, I've seen them all, but this one takes the cake. And here we go again. Sensors at two military mail facilities in the Washington area detected signs of anthrax on two pieces of mail, but the mail had already been irradiated, rendering any anthrax inert, they say. Officials weren't sure if this was an attack yet. Additional tests and other sensors at the two facilities, one of them at the Pentagon and the other nearby, found no presence of the bacteria, which can be used as a biological weapon. There were no initial reports of illness. Pentagon auditors have questioned more than $108 billion, million dollars in costs claimed by Halliburton on its $875 million contract to provide fuel in Iraq in 2003-2004. The Defense Contract Audit Agency has faulted Halliburton and its subsidiary KBR for failing to provide the records necessary to evaluate pending contracts. Here's my favorite one. The auditors are questioning a payment of $27.5 million to transport $82,000 worth of propane. Can you believe that one? $27.5 million to transport $82,000 worth of propane. China's parliament, by the way, has approved a law now authorizing an attack to stop rival Taiwan from pursuing formal independence a day after the president of China told the military to be prepared for war. The ceremonial National People's Congress passed the law despite U.S. appeals for restraint and warnings by Taiwan that it would damage regional stability and tenuous relations between the two countries. Customers of a German supermarket chain will soon be able to pay for their shopping by simply placing their finger on a scanner at the checkout. That's it. They've already had a couple people test this, and apparently they've got a database with everybody's bank account information. So when they're ready to check out, they just put their finger right on this machine, and that's it. They just walk right out. The White House, by the way, has confirmed that President Bush has nominated Mike Griffin, the head of the Space Department at Johns Hopkins University's Applied Physics Laboratory, to be the next NASA administrator. So it did not go to Richard C. Hoagland. Griffin, by the way, is a rocket scientist with an MBA. He has previously worked at NASA as the agency's associate administrator for exploration in the late 80s and early 90s. We are issuing an invitation to Mike Griffin to be a guest on Coast to Coast, and also Richard C. Hoagland will be along. Should be a fascinating program if Mike Griffin decides he wants to come on the program and talk about some of the potential new goals for NASA under his watch. By the way, that fireball that streaked through the night sky Saturday, startling a lot of people, all the way from southern Oregon to the Seattle area. Scientists say it was probably a meteor that disintegrated just before any fragments fell into the Pacific Ocean. People say it was like a big ball of fire. I could see it as a trail of blue light. Pilots, air traffic controllers, police, a lot of people saw what was described as a green ball of fire with a long tail. A farmer in the country of India has been fined for refusing to have his haunted house exorcised. Siban Saran was fined for ignoring orders of elders to exorcise his ghost-infested home. Apparently, the deaths of his son, his wife, his grandson, followed by the elopement of his second wife, led villagers to suspect there's something wrong with this house. It's possessed by ghosts. He was told to get his house exorcised after a witch doctor decreed the ghosts occupying it could cause harm to the entire village. He has reportedly paid a fine by borrowing money. Now he may have to sell his land and house to simply pay off the debt. And a tramp has been arrested for regularly sleeping in an old grave in Holland. The 43-year-old digs apparently earth out from under a gravestone, crawls inside, and goes to bed. Well, they have given him a warning, and now they are charging him with violating tombs, and they're going to take him away. In a moment, our guest, investigative reporter John Rappaport, as we talk about the human bird flu. John Rappaport has worked as an investigative reporter for 20 years. He's the author of 5 books. He's written on medical fraud, deep politics, health issues for newspapers and magazines, both in the United States and in Europe, including CBS's Health Watch, Spin, Stern, LA Weekly. And the LA Weekly, by the way, placed John's name in nomination for a Pulitzer Prize for his interview with the president of Salvador University, where a military takeover had occurred. We asked John to do a little checking into the human human bird flu. John, welcome back to Coast, by the way.
Great to be here, George. Hi.
How real is this? Is it contrived again? I mean, I don't want to alarm people, but the WHO is saying that it's got a very high fatality rate. They're warning of a possibility of a worldwide pandemic on one hand, and then on the other, I'm saying, here we go again.
It's contrived. It's contrived in the same way that SARS is, that West Nile is, that a number of other of these viruses are. It's contrived in the sense that there are lots of, oh, this could be, and we're not sure, and maybe, and we could be on the brink and on the verge of this and that and the other thing. But there is no hard evidence for that. There's a tremendous propaganda campaign that's going on to scare people into thinking that we're on the brink of a worldwide pandemic, but that has its political reasons, which we can get into. But the raw facts are that as of March 11th, 69 cases out of, I don't know, what does the planet hold now?
6 billion people, maybe more.
69 cases around the world total. 46 deaths that they are calling deaths from bird flu in humans, except in those cases, from what I've been able to gather, a large chunk of the people are elderly, were suffering from other conditions that suppress their immune systems, in which case they could die from almost anything. And, you know, what we're getting here is basically propaganda. The virus was, according to conventional texts, isolated first in 1961. So whereas everybody looks at this and says, oh, this is a whole new thing and blah, 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 1961, since then they've known about this particular...
So they've known about this for 40 plus years.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of misinformation out there about this, and the most basic misinformation is when you read words or hear words in the media that are like suspected case, maybe, mm-hmm. We believe this could be an example of human-to-human transmission, which is the item that they're pumping up at the moment. You know, if it could be passed from one human to another, then this could be a tremendous spreading pandemic and so on and so forth. I just can't buy it. And I could get into a lot more detail that I've, you know, written about.
I understand. And by the end of this hour, John, we're going to talk about the influenza in this country and the fact that we did not get our 50 million doses because of contamination from that Chiron plant in the United Kingdom. And we have had a minimal flu. I mean, granted, people who've had the flu in this country are saying, yeah, easy for you to say. But overall, we haven't had nearly the kind of flu that we had a year or so ago, and this is with half the doses of vaccine. So I want to talk with you this hour about that, too, because as you know and I feel, we do have our suspicions about these things.
Right.
Now, in this particular case, on the bird flu, why are they trying to create the fear? I mean, are they working on a vaccine that they want everybody to take? What's going on there?
Okay. There's several levels to this. Let's take the lowest level. You've got a bureaucracy of research scientists. They need money. They mm-hmm. want grants. Anything they can do in their specialty, I don't care what it is, cancer, AIDS, influenza, to get money, to create the sense of a great need, they will do. That's the way bureaucracy
works. It's called
job
security, right?
Absolutely. Got to make the car payments, send the kids to college, you know, all of that factors in. And so if they have an opportunity to put out some propaganda on this so that lots of public money will flow their way for research, they're going to do it. At a slightly higher level than that, we have, of course, the profits the drug companies can make from formulating a vaccine and selling who knows how many hundred million doses in this particular case of bird flu. And then as we move up the strata of motivation, let's say, we come to a much higher level where it's an operation. It's like an intelligence operation. And the idea is, hey, we want to put the clamps on populations and people to as great a degree as we can. without making people think that it's political, that it has some left connotation or right connotation or whatever. Medical is a fabulous area for doing that because we can say, hey, it's a germ. Well, you know, we didn't do anything. It's just there. And so we're going to have to say to you, stay in your house, you're quarantined, you can't go out, you can't, you don't have the right of assembly with people. If you start talking against this kind of a program that we're trying to institute here with mandatory vaccinations and quarantines, we can actually arrest you for sedition or for speaking in a way to disturb the status quo. All of these kinds of things that are politically motivated to make people more into slaves is definitely on the agenda, and this is a great way to do it in steps, step by step by step.
Baby steps.
We saw that in the SARS case, for the first time, we were talking about industrialized nations in the West, Canada, Toronto, close down the city. Want to see what's going to happen if we try to do that? Let's see if these people will knuckle under and obey, if they'll stay home, if businesses will close down, if they'll lose millions and millions of dollars and not put up a great stink about it, and they haven't.
They killed tourism in Toronto
totally.
While that was going on.
Wiped it out. And the experiment at a very high level of intelligence operation is, let's see what happens. Will the people rebel? And, you know, I've had many reports out of Canada about businesses that were considering getting together after the SARS thing was over and suing the government for billions of dollars. Never happened. Never happened. Everybody just, you know, bit the bullet and went on, which shows you that people are just not intelligent enough or gutsy enough to get out there and say, something was wrong with this, and we want our money back.
Maybe they don't want to fight the system, John. Maybe they're tired of fighting the system.
So this lets, you know, high-level people who are in the business of trying to enslave this world, this gives them a clue that people are going to knuckle under. They learn from the SARS episode. So now they've got bird flu. That's the next big deal.
And so you don't actually you believe that there's something afoot here to control people, to create some kind of very sinister circle around people under the guise of these diseases, and that these diseases that may be real just aren't as bad as they're telling us.
Absolutely. No question about it. I started writing about this in 1986, 87, and I've seen it go step by step by step over and over again with different of these operations. And at the highest level, this is definitely what it's all about. This is what they want to do, and they're becoming very successful at it.
The influenza. Last year, they said we're going to have a horrible flu season this year. Then they came out and said we're 50 million doses short because of contamination at the Chiron plant in the United Kingdom. They've always told us that we average about 36,000 deaths a year in this country alone. That amounts to about 720 people per state. And just a few days ago, the CDC came out and said, well, it's not as bad as we thought it would be, and we've had a few states report their first official flu cases. Now, they didn't even say anything about death. So I want to ask you, John, and then we'll talk about it when we come back and also take phone calls. When we're supposed to average, sadly enough, 720 deaths per state during the flu season, and we've had minimal this year,
right?
What does that tell you with less vaccines?
Yeah, it tells you the less vaccine, the better off you are. It reminds me of that famous situation in Israel some years ago where all the doctors went on strike. And, you know, the disease rates and the death rates plummeted.
I mean, without treatment.
Yeah, because of, you know, nobody's getting these toxic drugs. And people are saying, well, I can't get treated. I guess I'm just going to have to, you know, wait it out. And most of those people get better, you know. And whereas the doctors pile on with drug after drug after drug, and these drugs are toxic, and the vaccines have deleterious effects. And without the vaccines, people just kind of say, okay, well, maybe I'll get the flu. And then we see this. We had a very light season. And, of course, you're never going to see the Centers for Disease Control or anybody like that say, gee, that's a clue. You know, maybe we should look at this. They're going to make up all kinds of other reasons. But the stark fact is that right there staring you in the face. Less vaccine, less disease.
Stay with us. John Rappaport, our guest. We're going to open up the phone lines, give you an opportunity to talk with John about some of the things we've just been talking about. I'm George Norrie. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
Miss part of the show? Listen online with Streamlink. Log on to coasttocoastam.com. Talk with George Norrie. Call the Wildcard line at area code 818-501-4109. The first-time caller line is area code 818-501-4721. To talk with George toll-free from east of the Rockies, call 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, toll-free at 1-800-618-8255. International callers may reach George Norrie by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From the City of Angels, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
You know, I was just mentioning how in a store they're testing now where you just put your fingerprint on a machine and you check out that way. You can read all about stories like that in the March issue of the After Dark newsletter. How do you order and get 14 issues for the price of 12? Call 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888. That's toll free. 1-888-727-5505. You can also go online safe and secure. A lot of people just like to order that way. CoastToCoastAM.com. John, I do not take the flu shot. I do not tell people what they can do. I mean, that's their own business. I have a friend in St. Louis. She's a little toughy 68-year-old. She skis and everything else, but she says to me, I'm getting the flu shot, George. And so she marches herself into these drugstores every season, and she was one of the ones to get the flu shot this year. And sure enough, came down with the worst case of the flu she's ever had in her life. Uh-huh. I mean, and that's after getting the shot.
Right.
I mean, how does this happen?
Well, you have to look to the shot, for one thing, because these flu shots, you know, contain all of the ingredients that, chemical ingredients that are in all vaccines. They contain such things as formaldehyde and various versions of aluminum and so forth. They're being injected directly into the body, bypassing various defense systems mm-hmm. on the way. They do contain germs, and not only the germs that they're supposed to contain, but germs that are produced by the manufacturing process, such as when they pass these flu germs through chicken eggs and so forth, and you get all kinds of things that you can't detect. So, you know, you have to look to the vaccine. When people are, you know, afraid to do that, most people, because then they become, oh my God, do you mean this is not the way to go? I don't just salute every time they tell me to get a vaccine and what's going on. But more and more people are realizing that what they have to do is build up their immune system, basically and generally, and that that's the best protection that they have against all sorts of diseases. And this revolution has been going on for the last 40 years, and it keeps getting stronger and stronger, which is yet another reason why the public health agencies are becoming so hysterical about predictions of gloom and doom, because they want to put people into those places where they're going to get shot up with vaccines.
If one day there is a pandemic, are they going to jump up and down, John, and say, I told you so, but you had to listen to that Rappaport guy?
Yeah, right. I'm sure they will. But
you don't think it's going to happen?
No. If it happens, it'll happen another way, which
is a very dangerous way.
Yeah, which I'll talk about in a second. But, you know, it's very easy to make these predictions because you can say, oh, it's coming. Well, it might not come this year, but oh, it's coming. And then if 30 years down the line something bad happens, you can say, well, that's what we predicted, you know. So you can't lose when you keep moving the goalposts back all the time.
It's like these people that say we're going to get hit by an asteroid.
Yeah.
Eventually, we're going to.
Right. Or the sun is going to blink off. Yeah, well, wait around for a couple of billion years. But, you know, the way I have scoped this out through numerous interviews is that if there is some kind of global pandemic, it would be intentionally provoked. I simply do not believe, especially in the industrialized countries, that with the level of available food, nutrition, of the lack of overcrowding compared to, say, 19th century England, you know, all that sort of stuff,
right,
modern sanitation, I simply do not believe that some natural germ is going to spread and cause millions of deaths all over the world. In order for these things to happen, it would have to be intentional. I mean, they would have to begin spraying all manner of germs from planes or from helicopters or seeding them in other ways for this to happen. Or even more likely, this is a scenario that I would predict. A chemical would be used secretly in a localized area somewhere.
As a test?
As a test and also as a way, as a persuader. And it would be a gigantic story. You'd have every news anchor of any note in the world right out there. They would be cordoned off from a town. They would be broadcasting. There would be all kinds of PR about
heroic researchers. They'd have a mask on while they were doing it.
Yes, working in order to save lives, to develop a vaccine and drugs and this and that. And they would be reporting the death statistics. And this would be gigantic. And in fact, the germ researchers would be completely in the dark. They wouldn't know anything about what's really going on, because you give a germ researcher some money and tell him to find a germ, he's going to find it. I mean, there's millions of germs you can come up with you've never even seen before. But meanwhile, agents, operatives, would have seeded a certain localized area with a dangerous chemical. People would get sick. Some people would die. They would call it a disease. They would give it a name. They'd say they found a germ. It would be a gigantic story. And everybody after that would be convinced, wow, if this ever happens again, we just have to do whatever the authorities tell us to do. Don't talk to people. Don't get around people. Stay in the house. Obey all orders coming through your TV set. You know, this is a way of creating a 1984 Orwell situation.
Was it the same, John, and we'll go to the calls in a second, was it the same when we ordered millions and millions of vials of these smallpox vaccines just a few years ago? You remember that?
Sure. I mean,
and they're still on the shelf. I don't even know if they're any good anymore.
No.
Are they? What's their shelf life?
And, you know, Tommy Thompson, who was the Secretary of Health and Human Services, the sort of number one health guy in the country, when they started this whole scare campaign, said, man, you get your smallpox shot, and we're setting up centers all over the country, And then people didn't show up to get their shots, and then doctors began saying, this is ridiculous.
Even some of the nurses and doctors didn't want to take the shots.
They didn't want to take it because they knew it was dangerous. It's a very dangerous vaccine, and they just refused. And by the end of the whole debacle, I mean, it was a total catastrophe in terms of, nobody showed up. Thompson said, I'm not getting the shot.
It, like, faded away.
And I don't think anybody in the cabinet should, president's cabinet should get the shot, and blah, blah, blah. And it all faded away, and nobody in the mainstream press called him on it. I mean, talk about...
And now it's faded away.
Yeah, it's totally
nobody's
gone.
Even brought up... This is the first time it's been brought up, I think, in 2 years.
Yeah,
nobody's
exactly.
brought up the fact that we've got millions of these vials tucked away somewhere.
Exactly. And nothing happened, and... You know, it's a dangerous vaccine, and we have, in a real sense, the mainstream media to blame for this, because I'm talking about the most, you know, scaredy-cat reporters in the world. Why didn't somebody stand up at a press conference at the White House or at Health and Human Services and say, what happened to this thing?
Mm-hmm.
Why did you say a year ago that this was very dangerous and everybody should get the flu and the smallpox vaccine? And now all of a sudden you're going the other way completely. I mean, would you explain yourself, please,
yeah.
so that everybody can understand? Nobody said this. It was like a dead silence came over the whole thing.
And they definitely won't answer it without the question. That's
no,
for sure.
That's for sure.
To the phones we go. Let's go west of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Kathy in Mesa, Arizona.
Hi, Kathy.
I wanted to mention something about the vaccines, and then I wanted to mention something about pain pills and all. As far as the vaccines, I know many veterinarians who have started very quietly giving pets the vaccines in their leg because the normal injection site between the shoulder blades, they started seeing a lot of cancers coming up where animals had been revaccinated over and over.
Up there in the muscle section.
And the attitude is, well, we can amputate a leg, but when the cancer forms in between the shoulder blades, the pet's a goner. So we also need to look at the fact that we just keep injecting and injecting and injecting into people, too, from that standpoint. The other thing is, I have gotten to know and worked with many very wonderful people who have had injuries over the years, and I had bad injuries I had to deal with, but I'm very blessed that I'm actually allergic to all the narcotics, and people think I'm crazy when I say that, but the difference is I never got hooked on narcotics because I couldn't take them, and many, many people who are getting caught up in the so-called justice system, it's because they were just pushed pain pill after pain pill, and it's such a vicious cycle that then they build up a tolerance and they have to take more and they have to take more. And instead of really doing proper physical therapy, teaching people mind controls, teaching them deep breathing, stretching techniques, moving, yoga type things, all those kind of things that you can do, getting into meditative states, things you can do to really deal with pain, the doctors and the whole system just continue to push those drugs and push those drugs, and then people get hooked on them. And the next thing you know, the doctor goes, oh, I can't give you any more. Or the insurance company says, well, no, we're not paying for any more. And they take people off of them cold turkey.
Well, and the other
people are just left totally disabled in horrible shape with injuries.
And what's happening, too, Kathy and John, you get cases where these drugs are not properly tested. And then a year or so later, the FDA goes running around going, well, we're going to take this off when there's some kind of disclosure. And to me, that's criminal.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that people completely overlook is that the clinical trials of these drugs before they're approved are short trials, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, maybe 14 weeks, whatever. And then, of course, they're prescribed long-term for millions of people. And things show up that you would never see in a short-term trial. And the FDA just kind of, oh, well, shrugs it off and then handles it later. It's a travesty and it's a crime.
They're trying to recoup that research cost, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
First-time caller line, welcome to Coast, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Oh, yes, this is Ruth from the state of New Jersey.
Hello, Ruth. Go ahead.
Hello, how are you this evening?
Good.
I'm trying to talk a little quietly because I don't want to wake up the rest of the house.
I'll wake up the whole house.
Yeah.
Turn up that radio.
I just see this whole inoculation thing and the creation of stress and panic in the general population and the mandate of these inoculations as to be a method to inject microchips into the general population for governmental control use. I was appalled a couple of years ago when my first grandchild was in the hospital. He was born in December. And before he came home, he was injected without his parents' knowledge of something that they said was a hepatitis vaccine. And then when he came home, he had a social security number. And it hit me in my solar plexus. I thought to myself, gee, I remember, I don't think I got my first social security number until I was 14 years old. And here this baby comes home from the hospital, and he has an SS number. And he had an injection that his parents didn't know about or didn't approve of. And I think that they create these panics and they mandate these injections because I think that they are looking to microchip the general population for identification purposes.
Well, and in addition to that, as you've been pointing out, John, you have to have disease, whether it's contrived or not, in order then to create the vaccines to make your profits. These are publicly held companies that have stockholders they have to report to, and they have to make record profits every year.
And the best example, perhaps, is the hepatitis B vaccine, because that is given to babies under some completely bogus conclusion that somehow babies are at risk for a disease which springs up in populations of, say, IV drug users, you know, and some, or mm-hmm. people who engage in promiscuous sex. And here's a baby being born, and they have invented all kinds of reasons why babies are supposed to get this shot, and it's totally ridiculous. I mean, it has nothing, even if you were in favor of vaccines, in that particular case, there is absolutely no basis in fact for this idea, which is that every baby has to get that vaccine. And I have heard many stories where the parents don't even know what's happening because they haven't looked into it before the baby's born, and then their baby gets the shot. All of a sudden, what was that? Oh, it's the hepatitis B shot. Everybody's got to have it, and there you go.
Can you tell a doctor no?
Yes, I have a friend who did recently. I mean, I know many people who have said no, but you need to do it ahead of time. You know, you don't want to be in a sudden situation where you're, you know, battling the doctor and grabbing for the syringe.
Yeah,
as he's about to,
and he pumps you by mistake.
Yeah, really. You know, you want to do this in plenty of time. You're going to have a baby. Okay, here's the deal. What are you thinking you're going to inject my baby with? Now, let me tell you the way it's going to be. And if the doctor refuses, you go to another doctor. I mean, you have to plan this out because things happen very fast in hospitals.
That's true. Wild card line, it's your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Good evening, George. This is Sean in Alabama.
Hello, Sean.
I'm glad I got through. I came across an article a week ago that is going to blow your socks off about the flu. If I could read just three brief sentences from it.
Very brief, yeah.
Okay, it says, Sanghui Seo of Chungnam National University in Daejeon, South Korea, entered 6 genetic sequences from pigs into GenBank in late October. Henry Nieman, founder of Recombinomics, came across the data in late November and noticed that they contained between 3 and 7 genes from the WSN33 virus, which was created in 1933 by a London lab researching the 1918 flu pandemic. If there really are WSN33 sequences in pigs and probably birds on farms in Korea, Nieman said, then there's a very major problem.
Yeah, well, you do get these cases where people tinker in labs endlessly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I could document this, you know, from here to the moon. And then somehow it ends up in animals because these were lab animals they were originally using. It somehow could end up in humans because of certain experiments. And what they begin to find is, gee, we made this thing.
What if they dump this stuff, like, in the water? Can they? You know, let's assume they have to get rid of it.
Well,
they just
of course,
dump
they're
it
not
somewhere.
Supposed to. I mean, they're supposed to be maintained in, you know, total isolation in sealed canisters and so forth. But in the first book that I wrote, AIDS, Inc., in 1988, I documented a horrendous period at the National Cancer Institute when they were doing experiments on animals, when they were injecting these animals with germs from other species, cross germs, chemicals, trying to destroy their immune system so they could see if germs really caused cancer. I mean, and it was like, you would say it was like a Laurel and Hardy movie if it wasn't a tragedy, because the safety procedures were so horrendous. Vials were being broken. I've got stories in that book about vials of germs being shipped around by the mail, and then they end up in labs, and the package is half torn open, and some of the vials are broken. I mean, the labs themselves are a serious source of horrendous problems, and this has nothing to do with natural germs. It has to do with lunatics experimenting, just wildcat.
Let me ask you a quick question. China says they're working on an AIDS vaccine, and they're beginning to give it to 49 volunteers. In order for them to decide whether the vaccine works or not, don't they then have to expose these people to the HIV virus?
Well, of course, that's one of the limitations, because they'll never do that. So then they're going to try to make up their minds about whether this vaccine is successful completely.
I mean, how do you know it works if you don't do that?
You know, this is a subject for an entire show, is the whole HIV hoax itself. But suffice it to say, as long as they keep moving back the goalposts and saying that this virus can remain in the body in a latent condition for up to 30 years before it causes disease.
Used to be 10, right?
At first they said 6 months, a year, 5 years, 10, 15, and I think they finally said it could even be 30. I mean, with all these ridiculous unscientific estimates, they have cut their own throats as far as a vaccine is concerned, because how are they ever going to be able to test it? You're going to say, well, we're going to have to wait 30 years and see if these people get sick.
Yeah, you can't do that. No. You can't do that. John, keep in touch. There's some more shows on the horizon, my friend.
Okay, George, thank you so much.
John Rappaport updating us on the WHO warning us of the human bird flu mutation. And as you heard John Rappaport, he believes this is all contrived. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast with our guest physicist John Ackerman. You're going to love tonight as we talk about Velikovsky. What happened 6,000 years ago in this solar system?
The official website of Coast to Coast AM is www.coasttocoastam.com. Log on now.